Love Talk Radio.
Welcome to Namaste Radio. The intent of our programming is to increase awareness, inspire loving action, and ignite transformation and healing in our listeners, and through them, our world. Namaste Radio is brought to you by Namaste Publishing. Please join its interactive spiritual community. Communicate directly with authors, guest bloggers, and others like yourself who are spiritually seeking a better way of living. Connect, make friends, and be one with our new Namaste Global community at namastepublishing.com. And now, please welcome your host for this hour, Marie Bernard, on Namaste Radio, radio that will change your life.
Okay, welcome back to the show. So it looks like we have Bill Gorak Hayashi on the line. I'm going to bring him up in just a moment. He is a professor of humanities at Columbia College in Chicago, which is a liberal arts college focusing on arts and media studies. He teaches a number of courses in consciousness, spirituality, and empowerment. He's also a practicing experiential psychotherapist, and he presents workshops in meditation, focusing, and creativity. Gorak is a steward of the Aspen Grove and founder and advisor of Light Circles, which is a student organization working with contemplative practices and soul shift art. He also wrote the preface for the second edition of Michael Brown's upcoming Presence Process, which is coming out very soon. And joining him this evening are a few of his students from Columbia College. So welcome to the show, Gorak. Are you there?
Yes. Yes, for me.
Hello.
Hello.
Sorry for the technical difficulties. Thank you so much for calling in.
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess I realized probably the conference line doesn't work if it's long distance. Is that right?
I was able to dial out, but I wasn't able to dial the passcode to get in to talk with all of you.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, but now you're all here, so thank you so much. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
I just want to talk with Gorak for a moment, and then I'm going to have all the students come on and introduce themselves. So, Gorak, when did you decide to start teaching youth about spirituality and consciousness, and what made you come to that decision?
Yes, well, really, in the mid-70s, I was teaching at another college in Chicago, and I was focusing more on traditional literature courses, but I really got very interested in the Castaneda books that were just coming out, and but I knew that I couldn't teach those at the school that I was teaching at, but I'd heard about Columbia, and at that time it had a reputation for being a hippie school or equivalent to a hippie school where you could major in Tai Chi and whatnot, so I just called and said if they would be interested, and they said, well, we're in registration process right now, but come down and we'll advertise the course and see if students sign up. Well, many, many students signed up in one day, and so I was able to offer the course, and I really enjoyed the energy. There was a kind of immediacy about the students' responses. They really read it more as a kind of teachings about how to live their lives. And, you know, it was very different than teaching a traditional literature course. So that was my first taste of sharing this kind of wisdom with young people. And then maybe 4 years later, I actually got hired full-time to teach at Columbia itself. And since then, I've been teaching, courses related to spirituality and consciousness. And the reason I enjoy it so much is because it really does engage the students. I think there's a real hunger for this kind of knowledge, this way of actually perceiving the world and living your life that isn't through other means, but it's a direct experience of how they can experience the world in a different way based on spirit.
Wonderful. Well, I'm wondering if there's always been a need for this type of spiritual material being taught in college, or is it just recently that youth are becoming more interested in spirituality? What do you think?
Well, you know, I've been teaching these kinds of courses for maybe 25 years, and they always fill very, very quickly. What I have noticed, though, is maybe in the last 5 years or so, there's a greater sense of urgency. I think the young people are very tuned into, you know, because of internet and whatnot, to what's happening in the world. And so it's not simply a concern to find out more about consciousness, but it's also the question of the shift in consciousness and what they can contribute to that. And underneath it, I think there is a kind of urgency. So I think, you know, among a certain type of student, this kind of course has always had an appeal. But what's happening now, I think, is more of them are drawn to it, not simply for their own personal growth, but also to explore what they might be able to do to contribute to the new paradigm that's emerging.
Wonderful. Well, these students are definitely contributing to the new paradigm, so I'd like to bring everyone up. So let me see. What's the best way to do this? Someone calling from area code 630. What is your name?
My name is Teresa Cesario. How are you, Marie?
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. And you help organize everything and get everyone on the air, so thank you so much for that, Teresa.
No problem, no problem. We're all called to a different method of communicating tonight. You know, what you were just talking to speak to what Bill was just talking about of the transition of the need for more of a community based on, you know, the internet and technology really coming into the foreground of youth's method of communication speaks to something that Eckhart said in one of his books. He says, the insanity of the collective egoic mind is amplified by science and technology, and it's rapidly taking our species to the brink of disaster, you know, and right now I think we're at a crucial point of evolution. We need to evolve to creating a community within our generation, or else we're not going to be able to create that unity to survive as a species. So I think that with Bill's classes, he really builds a foundation of knowledge that we're able to translate into our everyday lives and connect with people on a deeper level, where a lot of individuals that haven't had the blessing of having a teacher like him are somewhat nervous and wary of creating that type of depth with another individual. So for me, taking Bill's classes and translating that into light circles has really been a lifesaver.
I love that. Awesome. I love what you're saying about unity and creating the community to make change. Thank you so much, Teresa. And from area code 920, what is your name and why did you decide to take Gorok's classes?
Hi, I'm Alia Zini. The reason why I took Bill's class, I love the names of the classes, and I love the descriptions. You know, philosophy of love. I mean, who's not going to love that? and also, I had a friend who also took philosophy of love and said, you would love Bill Hayashi. You absolutely love him. So I was curious, so I ended up taking mystical consciousness. And I'm just for the heck of it, just, you know, see what would happen. And it really was an absolute life changer. You know, I used to be so stressed all the time and would look for approval from my teachers, from my friends, from, you know, my parents, everybody. And then to come into Bill's class, and I think it was like the first class, like he wanted nothing more than for us to be authentic. And I was like, wait, it's okay to be me? You know, it's okay to be me and I won't be inappropriate. I won't be, you know, I just think sometimes we get so, you know, hushed down sometimes. And he really let us speak our truth and absolutely changed my world upside down. And I know he did that to many others as well and, you know, helped me find my, you know, helped me grow into who I am now. So, thank you, Bill.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. And from area code 815.
Hi, my name is Cameron Yergler. And, I guess... Gorok, the first day of class, I took Philosophy of Love my senior year at Columbia. And the first day of class, Gorok went around the room and asked people, why are you taking this class? And he said to give two answers, the first from your head and the first from your heart. And, you know, when I thought of why I was in that class, you know, things came up like, you know, I need a humanities credit, or I need a writing intensive course, and or I was just, you know, maybe interested by some of the description and thought I'd check it out. But when I really listened to my heart and asked my heart why I took that class, what came up was, I want to be in a state of constant peace. And it really just kind of really surprised me, because that was the first time that I'd really even, I got a better understanding of what, like speaking from your heart actually means. It was the first time I've actually asked my heart something and felt like it came from this really real, deep place. And that was very intriguing from the first day. And I guess it creates such a, the class is just such a cool environment, because you're vulnerable. Like we would dance at the beginning of classes, and it was just amazing how doing something like that with people that you've just met really bonds you. And, if you're vulnerable in front of people and you're, you know, feel sort of embarrassed sometimes and realize that they're not going to judge you no matter what. And they understand what you're going through, because they're going through that same thing. It just really creates this deep trust in, just love and support with people in your class, and you don't usually get that anywhere else, you know, so it's just like such an amazing thing.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Cameron. And from area code 309.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Marie. The first class I took with Bill was called Mystical Consciousness, East and West. And I took it because a guy I worked with in a coffee shop that I worked at in high school suggested that I take a class on Eastern philosophy. I went to Roman Catholic grade school and a Roman Catholic high school, and I was always probably one of the more religious kids. I was always very spiritual, and but I had a lot of ideas about what was right and wrong, because in Roman Catholicism they teach you this is right and this is wrong. And this guy who I worked with, I was always attracted to him because he was so lively. He just seemed so alive and, like, happy, and he would talk to everybody. He had a curiosity about him, and it made me very curious about him. And so things that he'd suggest, I would take them seriously. So my beginning of my sophomore year, I saw this class. It was Mystical Consciousness East and West, and it said in the description that we would learn to meditate and learn about these different philosophies. So I jumped on board, and I was changed my life. I was very happy I got in it.
Awesome. Thank you. And it's Marie?
Yes.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Yeah.
So from area code 816, what is your name and why did you decide to take classes with Gorakh?
Hi, my name's Sarah.
Sarah?
Sarah, yep, my name's Sarah. So I actually had this one teacher at school, and I'm pretty sure that she was a very enlightened teacher of mine, and she taught a film editing class. And I took her class, and she would always say these things like, you don't need to be anything because you already are something. And she would suggest these readings and have us do these journal entries. And I think that started to kind of expand my mind a little bit. And then eventually, I remember, like, Bill has this awesome reputation around the school. Like, people are always recommending his classes. They fill up so fast. And my friend Elise said that Bill subbed one of her classes one time, and that I should really look into taking one of his classes. So I also took Mystical Consciousness East and West. That was the first class that I took. And I remember going into class and sitting down, and the very first thing we did is he just rung his gong and we started meditating. And I thought, this is awesome. Like, it was just diving right into it. And it was just the self-discovery that you have in his classes. It's just, I really learned to truly love myself and discover myself at a level I never would have thought possible. And at the end of every class, you go around the room and you talk about what resonated with you from the class that day. And so everyone goes around and says, wow, this one part of class, like, really, really hit home for me. And as you go around the room and everyone mentions, you know, what resonated with them, you see, like, you see yourself in other people, and it really builds this trust in this community, and you realize just how much everyone is a reflection of yourself. And it's like a really, it's a really beautiful thing. And since taking those classes, it's just been, it's been a journey. It's been amazing.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sarah. So Gorakh, I'm wondering, meditation has been mentioned a few times, but what are some of the other skills that you teach in your class to help your students integrate the content into their daily lives?
Yes, well, I think what's important is this approach that I take, which is called the Vedantic method, which is actually developed in the forest ashrams of India, you know, hundreds of years ago, as a way for disciples of a master to really approach enlightenment. And there are three steps or three elements of that approach. The first is called shravana, and it's actually learning an idea or a concept through the mind, to understand it with the mind. Let's say something, for example, like the pain body. Oftentimes I use Eckhart's books. And so, you know, people discuss what pain body means to them, but using Eckhart's languaging and his definition. And then the second step is a manana, which is to get it at an experiential level. Really, when have you experienced the pain body? Would you use other words to talk about your experience of the pain body? And then the third step is called nididhyasana, where you take what you've learned both at a conceptual and an experiential level and you apply it in your life. And so each week as students do the reading, they find something from the text that resonates for them. They talk about what it means. They have to turn in an inquiry sheet every week. They say what it means to the writer, what it means to them, how they've experienced, what this insight has shown them about themselves, and then how they can actually apply it in their lives. And so in this way, they themselves choose the terms that most speak to them, and they have to understand it not just with the mind, but what is their lived experience and why is it important to them. And then they also seek ways to apply it and actually do so and describe that and the impact of that on their lives. So that's one thing I think that offers students the opportunity to look at these teachings like Eckhart Tolle's or Presence Process and just find words that speak to them and then how to integrate that concept or even a practice into their lives. Another skill that is turning out to be really important, and I hadn't really recognized this at first, but it's the practice of mindfulness. And you know, I simply talk about it as living in the present moment rather than, you know, dwelling on the past or thinking about the future. And so every week the students choose a day of mindfulness, and all they have to do is notice when they're in the present moment and when they catch themselves not being either in the past or the future. They do what they can to come back to the present moment through breath or through tuning in immediately to their senses or whatnot. And the first couple of weeks, they're really shocked at how rarely they're in the present moment. I mean, I was sort of surprised to find out through these Day of Mindfulness journal entries just how, how many of them are not in the present moment very often. And once they start to experience the effect of it, they get very, very excited. I mean, this is really, you know, Eckhart's The Power of Now. They really start to realize that the power of now makes a huge difference. Not only does it enliven their experience, but it also makes them much more efficient, you know, and much more creative, which are things that the Columbia students really like. So this idea of mindfulness, and then I think what's very important, as with the inquiry sheets, giving them the opportunity to actually focus on that practice or find a teaching that speaks to them and actually doing it and then actually writing about it and turning that into me. And then I always read those and make comments on them and questions. Now, what's really funny is, you know, halfway through the semester, someone will raise their hand and say, well, is it okay if we have more than one day of mindfulness? And, you know, I'll laugh and say, well, you know, it's actually a lifestyle. So, you know, sort of you can have as many days as you'd like, you know. I also have them meditate for at least 10 minutes four times a week. But then I began to see the impact that the days of mindfulness have, and so I suggest that the three other days they choose an activity, either eating a meal, taking a shower, walking to school, you know, looking out the window of the bus, where they that they make a mindful activity. And honestly, that seems to have a huge impact on how they experience the world because, you know, at the beginning, they're very much in their heads. So, those would be some of the skills that that I share with them. And as Cam mentioned, I think another very important one is knowing the difference of when you're listening to your heart and speaking from the heart and knowing from the heart, and when you're speaking from the mind or from the head.
So, Gorakh, I noticed that
yes.
when you were talking about the present moment and how so many of your students were living life not in the present moment, and it sounded like you were really surprised by that. So I'm just kind of wondering, because it's not at all surprising to me. So
yes.
from your perspective and your teaching for 25 years, do you think that youth today are living less in the now? Or do you think that this is just a typical issue that everyone deals with?
Well, see, I think you know, I've been meditating, you know, probably for, you know, 40 years, and so I think part of it is just I'd forgotten, you know, that many people who don't experience meditation really are in their minds a good deal of the time. So I think it's partly that, just not realizing just the difference in my experience from most, and I think that really is because I've meditated for a long time. But I also think that, you know, especially with the with all the technology, you know, Facebook and, you know, MySpace and text messaging. I mean, everything is so fast now, and much of it is mental, really. I think that does intensify the, not even necessarily being in the past or future, but being in your head and approaching life more from a mental perspective. I mean, text messaging is so, I mean, they text all the time. And yet, you know, because tone isn't, you can't perceive tone, the whole dimension of affect and feeling isn't usually involved in the communication. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts. Maybe it might be good to ask the students what they think about it, because I'm sure they're much more directly aware of the shift in this perception.
Okay, great. Well, I'm definitely interested in hearing what the students have to say. Do you students notice now that you've been practicing what Gorakh has been teaching in these classes, are you finding yourselves less overwhelmed with this information age that we're living in? Anyone? Let's say Teresa.
I'd like to speak to that if everyone's okay with that.
Yeah, who's this?
Mm-hmm. This is Teresa.
Hi, Teresa.
I think that one of the things with the stewards is we meet every Thursday morning to discuss what's currently going on in our lives and to hold space for each other and to reinforce the support we have for each other on our individual journeys. And I'm inevitably the one that runs in a state of panic most of the time. I'm like, everybody, I need to meditate right now. I had a crazy morning with work, and I just need to get grounded. And I think that word has solidified such a presence in my life that even articulating it in an auditory manner, saying the word grounded, just brings a peace throughout my body. We were just recently in New York this past weekend at a Young Contemplatives Alliance meeting, and one of the things we talked about is how spiritual practice is so important in nurturing the interior so that we can go out and on our paths and be successful and effective in going forth with our life's journey. So for me, meditation is really a way to understand the mode of which I'm supposed to use to get to where I need to be going. It's a shift that'll happen to detach myself from the mental realm and into spacious awareness. And when I'm in spacious awareness, which is unity with all things, I'm able to go throughout my daily activities with a sense of peace, calm, and love. So with meditation, it connects me with the divine, it connects me with the earth, it connects me with Father Sky, and when I'm connected with the world around me, they ignite me in my path. So if you're constantly being reinforced by that of which you attribute love and life to, you're gonna be successful with your daily endeavors. So meditation is the grounding force that helps be a catalyst in performing what your life's purpose is, for me.
Awesome. So are there, who else would like to speak about that?
I'd like to say something, if that's right. This is Cameron. And I guess the day of mindfulness that Gorakh spoke about was just huge for me. And I feel like that's something that helped me. It helped me then when I was taking the class. I would just notice whenever my thoughts were straying or if ever I was thinking of the past or of the future, and I could just notice how my breath felt or how my clothes felt against my body, and or just visuals around me, and it would just bring me back to the present moment and just quiet my mind, and it helped me tremendously then to steer thoughts away from fear and judgment, and it helps me tremendously now, just because. Like what Gorakh was saying about, everything that's going on with the internet, these social networking sites and text messaging, and this really is the, culture of instant gratification. If we want something, we can get it right away. If I can type in an address into a GPS and get my whole trip planned out in a matter of seconds, and if I'm hungry, I can hit a drive-through and get, whatever, and get food in 2 minutes, and it's all about now, and the same thing with spirituality for me sometimes, living in this day and age and in this generation, is I want that, that state of enlightenment right now, and I don't want to have to practice, and it's sometimes I get frustrated with the actual, with my actual spiritual practice and trusting the process. So, and someone was talking at the conference this past week in New York about constant vigilance with coming back to the present moment. It's like, just practice that constantly, and just. The day of mindfulness that I learned in Gorakh's class helps me trust my process more now. And I think that's huge. It's helping me be more patient. And if I'm able to practice that and just be present all the time, whenever I'm notice my mind straying, coming back to the present, I just really realize how blissful that is, and how, that's when I feel like I'm at my best. So I think that's the way that it's helped me to deal with living in this culture at this time, is just being able to trust the process and really have patience for it, and knowing that what I'm doing feels right. And empowering. So.
Awesome. Thank you, Cameron. I'm going to move on to the next question. If there's anything that you guys would like to add, just let me know. But for the students, we hear a lot about kids these days who are really disconnected, especially, you know, maybe they spend all their time on the computer playing video games, depressed kids, violent, lacking ambition, things like that. And I'm wondering what you think is the difference between those kids and students like you guys, or are some of you maybe formerly like that? Were you depressed and disconnected, and has that changed?
I'll say something to that. This is Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey. I think right now there's just a lot of fear and a feeling of being disconnected in society right now for people our age. I think it's a lot about fear and just this lack of community, because our generation doesn't respond to religion anymore like our parents. And religion, it was like the way to build community back in the day. It's like how you would connect to people or connect to something higher than yourself. And now we don't respond to religion, but how are we going to make those connections? And so I think now it's about that's why community, I think, is so important right now. And but I think because we don't have those connections, that's what's, you know, we have all this fear, and I think that's what causes people to kind of take it out on things like, you know, sitting in front of the computer or, you know, having all these distractions. And someone else want to speak about that too?
With the technology these days, this is Allie, by the way, people can just stay in their room on the computer, but they're not realizing that they're completely isolating themselves that way. And, you know, by isolating themselves, that creates a fear to, like, be a little bit more social, you know? And the more you do it, the more fearful you're going to be. And I think... But the one thing is, I think we're all thirsting for it. I just don't think that. I don't think everybody knows it. And I think it just takes, you know, somebody, you know, like Bill, or, you know, like one of us stewards, or, you know, anybody in this sort of community, to just wear who we are in order to have them, you know, be curious about it. Like Marie said when she... You know, when she was working with that one guy, you know, he had this curiosity about him, and that made her curious. Maybe people are just, you know, lost in searching for their thing too.
Hey, this is Gorak. You know, I think what this is her saying about community is really important. Because I think that a lot of the acting out or the isolation comes because there isn't a sense of community. And, you know, Parker Palmer has a phrase called circles of trust. And that's what light circles really is. It's a chance for young people to come together in a circle and really discuss, Sarah was saying, the deepest questions: who am I, what is my purpose, what makes me truly happy, with other young people, and because of the reluctance to get involved in traditional religion, which I think for at least Columbia students is really the norm, there isn't really a place for young to gather in these we spaces where they can explore these questions that, you know, have been the crux of inquiry for many, many years. It does offer them the opportunity to to share together. I mean, just the question of, do you think there's an afterlife is something, you know, it's always a very compelling question, or what do you think God is, or do you believe there is a God? I mean, to be able to answer, and I think what's very important in terms of my classes and light circles is there's really a sense that whatever you say is your opinion, and no one's going to judge you for it. They'll listen, and they'll be respectful. They may have their opinions, but everyone is given an opportunity to, because it's real. It's coming from, you know, the deepest, your deepest awareness, at least at the time. So I think that this opportunity to come together and to really explore these questions, to meditate together. Oh, another big important piece of my classes and of light circles is something that we call soul art. It's from Thomas More, the difference between art making that expresses the truth, your own truth, rather than creating pseudo images, which are images that are made just to sell or to, you know, as part of a trend, or which are kind of surface expressions. We share soul art also at Light Circles, and this is another way, I think, for you know, students to share what's most alive in them, what's new, what they're wanting to express. And again, all of this is offered in a context of total non-judgment. And, you know, this kind of art is really an expression of who you are. So if people don't like it, they don't like you, basically. And it's such a relief. You know, Columbia is an art school, and we've got the largest undergraduate film department in the country. And they're often devastated by the critiques they get, you know, in their classes. And it's such a sense of relief to just be able to offer what's most true for you and alive for you, and know that people are going to value it and be appreciative and look for what's great about it. So that's another way that we create community. And I think the larger point that we're making is that there really is a hunger for community among young people. And, you know, video games aren't just simply, you know, a chance to master another level, but people do it together. But it doesn't satisfy that deeper longing of authentic expression and real questioning of who am I, and, you know, why am I here, these kinds of questions. So I think that community and this kind of community is a response to the internet and to the isolation, and also to the reason I think people are depressed is because they feel alone and empty, and yet they don't know where to go, because, you know, the church was oftentimes the place in the past where people would have these deeper needs addressed and filled. But for whatever reason, and I think it's really because of the sense of authority and hierarchy and of my truth being the truth, you know, these young people, because of the internet, really realize that life is about diversity, and it's about, you know, choice and variety. So they don't respond well to being told. You know, I see my role as really not so much to offer the truth as to, you know, find ways, self-inquiry, meditation, for the students to find within themselves the place of their truth, of answers, et cetera. So I think it's a combination of creating community and ways to go inside and find your own truth, your own voice, your own creative expression. I think the more of this that can happen, the less problems there will be with depression and acting out. And because I think it all comes from fear and loneliness, really, the other kind of type of student or person that you're really asking about, Marie.
Thank you, Gorakh. And mm-hmm. we, today on the call, everyone is, they're your students, but they're also part of this life circle group. What's the difference between your regular classes and the life circle group? Maybe Coral,
can answer. Yes, it's not life circle, it's light circle.
Oh, light circle.
Yes, that's right. Well, light circles began because, always towards the end of the semester, the students in my classes express a fear that will they be able to continue meditating without the support of the class? You know, I mean, what's going to happen when they don't have to turn in an inquiry sheet every week or specifically create soul art? And then, you know, I would run into students, you know, 2 or 3 months afterwards, and you know, they would admit they weren't meditating that much and, you know, and they were losing a lot of the practices. And so I thought it would be really, and really honestly, the most important thing was they didn't have a community. They weren't experiencing this authentic community and circle of trust. So then I decided, well, it might be good to create a gathering space for former students to just at least once a month come together and meditate, see a film, you know, share soul art. And so that's basically the difference, which is light circles. And it's open to not just people who've taken classes with me, but to any young person who really wants to come and, you know, share these practices and not have to take it as a course. But really, it would be like going to, it's weird, but it's almost like going to church once a month or something, or this opportunity to come together in spirit and, you know, and question and explore and share the deepest dimension of your being. And I think this is what young people are really hungry for. Does that make it clear the difference, Marie?
Yes. So it sounds like there's your classes and the light circles. You don't have to be necessarily have taken a class, and it's just really a community, and you get together once a month. Is that right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so this community, light circles, is in the process of developing a community social networking site, correct?
Yes, that's right. Yes, I think mention has been made of these various social networking sites, and they really do serve a purpose, you know, and they're I think there's also a hunger for something deeper, where people can really share their process of self-discovery, and increasingly for young people, it's this desire to do something to support the planet and the shift that's happening. Andrew Harvey has this term, the sacred activism, and he raises the question, what cause in the world breaks your heart open? And Lightgrove.com, which we're creating along with a friend of mine named Aaron Froelich, who's a web designer and programmer, is to have a social network where the emphasis isn't so much on numbers. Indeed, where maybe, you know, there's a limit to how many core friends that you have or members, and the idea there is to really share, perhaps to work on a project together. Maybe it is. See, the Light Stewards actually meet once a week in a small group. And that's been enormously supportive. And in fact, that's what we're thinking of happening now at Light Circles, that the stewards now, there are 7 stewards, they may begin to facilitate their own trust circles, and those will start meeting more regularly, because we value so much having this opportunity once a week to check in and to you know, we'll choose a book and discuss the book like we did that with Michael Brown's presence process. But so that's going to start happening within light circles as an offshoot of light circles, but those will be physical meetings. But what we're, but what lightgrows.com is going to do is to provide the opportunity to have this kind of depth sharing in an ongoing way, and it'll use virtual teleconferencing and putting up soul art. And we're going to also recommend different exercises, how to create this kind of circle of trust, you know, to do a check-in or to do some simple meditations together. So that's going to be the virtual equivalent of light circles. So we're hoping that, you know, because of this need for this deeper sense of community, that that will catch on. And because I've actually found it very helpful to meet regularly with these young people. The tagline for the lightgrows.com is a new kind of family, and I think that really addresses what you know. I have my own family. You know, I have a 16-year-old son, and you know, and I think we're close, very close. But there is, you know, just I think, you know, it's wonderful to have more than one family. And, you know, with these particular young people and their very immediate kind of longing to awaken and to find the truth and to serve the shift, it's very inspiring for me. And, you know, and what's interesting is at a conference some months ago at Aspen Grove, some of these people, young people, were there, and someone asked them, you know, sort of, what do you think is important for these meetings and for your growth? And three of them, you know, all shouted out, no teachers. You know, and I was starting to think, well, what am I, chopped liver, you know, sort of. And then I really realized they don't perceive me as teacher in the sense of the old parent-child paradigm. I'm not an authority figure to them who tells them what they should do. You know, if anything, I'm a, you know, I'm an older sibling. And I really feel that because, you know, they have a freshness and they have a kind of authenticity. And, you know, and they don't respond well to dogma or to inauthenticity. So I learn a lot from them. Yes, light grows. It's going to be the virtual equivalent of light circles, and the essence of light circles is a new kind of family.
Wonderful. Well, if you would like to get on the air and ask a question, the number to call is 1-347-202-0129. We just have a few minutes left in the show. That's 347-202-0129. In the chat room, Sweet Lullaby has asked Gorakh, in the past years, the newer generations are more responsive and curious towards meditation and spirituality. How do you feel this is going to impact our society in the upcoming years? Perhaps Gorakh could answer, and then some of the students.
Yeah, well, I think as Cam was saying, he lives a much more peaceful life now. And I think what follows also from meditation is the experience of the now and of being mindful. So, you know, I really do believe that if people really begin to meditate and then they see the extension of that in mindfulness and the power of now, I mean, it's going to make a real shift in what the experience of reality is. I mean, you know, when Eckhart and Oprah discussed power of now, I mean, it really did have a huge impact on mainstream America. I mean, I don't know if it played in Canada, but certainly mainstream America really was strongly affected by those ideas. So I think that we keep talking about the shift. The main way that the shift can be supported is through people taking time to get quiet, to focus, and then to just experience the beauty and the power of the now.
Yeah, I'd just like to say something quickly, if that's all right, too. It really is all about perception, too, and this is something I had learned in Glass class and from Light Circles, and it's all about how we perceive our world, like, as you believe, so it is. So with, the way the world is, the way the world is, my meditation and spiritual practice has helped me to be able to shift my own attitude and my mindset to, see everything as serving a purpose and seeing everything as something that we can all work towards, for a better reality for everyone. So no matter what happens, no matter how we see it on, on the news or in the media, or how we're talking about it with friends or whatever happens, doing these sorts of things has just helped me to shift my own attitude towards that. And it's all about how we perceive it as how bad, things really are. We can see how nothing is really as terrible as it seems, like it's all serving a purpose, and we can work off of that. So just doing these things is, yeah. Go ahead, Marie.
I think that as young people become aware of this kind of thing and meditation and such, my own personal dream changed 180 degrees. It's I think that, my dream became less selfish, and it shifted to more of a what some people call the new world dream, where it's the dream for a better world versus a dream for survival. The old way of perceiving the world, and the way many people still live, is they're trying to find ways, the best way to survive, They want to make a lot of money, and they want to do what serves them because they're afraid of, not having enough. And as we start to meditate and we open up our world to more, to this perception of, oneness, the oneness between us and the world, and how, things that affect anything else, anything that we do that affects something else adversely affects us adversely in the same way. We completely change our dreams and what we decide to do with our lives, and therefore our own lives begin to benefit the world, and so the world becomes a better place.
Marie, maybe you could share what your emphasis, how your emphasis in Marie was a fashion design major, and I think she now has a different dream of what she wants to do with her fashion.
Well, initially I went into fashion design because it wasn't an office job. I felt like, it was creating and it was doing something that was fun, it was kind of a different job and more challenging than just typical, make money job. And but I still, you know, I bought into the stress of the industry and, you know, the way that most of the students at my school, and really the way that the fashion industry runs, it's this very high stress industry, and it's very glamorous, and it's very dramatic, and it's all about fame and being seen, and so certainly I bought into that, and fortunately it wasn't, you know, I took Bill's class my sophomore year of college, and so things started to shift for me, and now I'm not interested in, you know, the glamour and the waste, with all the very harmful practices of the fashion industry. I'd like to make sustainable and ethical fashion available, and that, like, would be completely revamping the fashion industry and turning it inside out. So, yeah.
Awesome. So it sounds like the stuff that you guys are learning in Gorok's classes are really spilling over into all types of communities and all types of lifestyles.
Absolutely.
Everyone.
Yeah, definitely.
Everyone has their own gifts and paths, and I think that meditation fits in all of it, of course. It can be a central part of everything and anything that you do.
Maybe Therese and Cam can talk about the kind of music. Therese and Cam are songwriters and performers, among other things. Maybe you can say something about the kind of music that you've been writing and what you perceive its purpose as.
I would love to speak to that. I think that with music, Bill said it so wonderfully this weekend, that music really is the religion of the future. It's a vibrational energy that we can all tune into that makes us all feel united. And, you know, growing up doing musical theater and, you know, at one point trying to be a country singer, singing about whatever was trendy and cool at the time, to where I am now has been a huge jump, and it's definitely attributed to coming into a new state of awareness. And I was asked to define what type of music I did the other day, and I had no exception but to call it eco-friendly folk rock. And that kind of, I guess, that means that the music that we sing about and everything that our songs are related to is creating awareness of the dreams of the universe outside of ourselves. Like Marie said, it's shifting into the new world dream. It's not what is my dream, me. It's what's the we dream, what's the universal dream. And in one of our songs, we ask the question, what were the dreams of the stars? Did they simply dream to shine? What were the dreams of the sea? Did they simply dream to flow? What were the dreams of the trees? Did they simply dream to grow? Or was there another purpose, another dream that they had, which was stifled by the dream of I, the me dream? You know, the pollution, the deforestation. And so we have to start asking these questions. We have to start asking, like, what are you feeding? Are you feeding your closet? Are you feeding your wallet? Are you feeding the universal desire for unity and love? And I think everybody should stop and reflect in meditation or just in their daily lives and look at what they're doing and see, what can I be doing to create this
universal utopia so we can all coexist together in love. So that's kind of what our music is focused on, is creating a song, a sound that people can listen to that not only is auditorily pleasing, but it nourishes the spirit and it nourishes the soul.
Oh, that's awesome. I'd love if you feel like sending me one of your songs, I'd love to play it on the show sometime.
I'd love to. The name of our band is Dreams of the Sea, appropriately.
there's one song that they've written that I really love, which is called London Bridge is Falling Down. And it's all about sort of the collapse of materialism. And I think one of the questions is, how are you going to respond to this? Will you swim, sink, or fly? And so their songs are always very real in terms of what, what's happening right now, but prompt people to think about what their options are and the different ways to respond. And as Teresa said, and Marie too, the New World Dream has to focus on oneness and on how to really to fly to the highest, which is really oneness. I'm sorry, do Cam and Teresa want to say anything? I might have oversimplified your song. I'm sorry, but Cam, do you want to say something?
No, I think that's great. You did a good job.
I feel good about it. The one other thing I just would mention is it also talks about sacredness. One of the questions we ask in there is London Bridge is falling down. Well, why is it falling down? Well, it's falling down because we built it up with jewels and we made it flashy and we made a commercial for it and we put it on the air and we sold it in mass consumption and we used a lot of raw materials and we deteriorated the world around us just to make it flashy. And if we can't hold ourselves as something that's sacred, what's next? Like in the question in the song, it says, what's next, the Golden Gate? And just in reference, like, well, what's next to go? If nothing is sacred, then what can we hold to our hearts? And so it's just saying, like, you, the representative, the metaphor is we are the London Bridge. We need to keep ourselves suspended and we need to hold space and we need to be grounded so that we can support those around us. We're all a universal bridge, and if one of the planks is loose, it's up to the rest of us to have the strength on either side to hold ground. So it's just about support and love and sacredness as well.
Beautiful. Oh, I can't wait to hear the song. Well, it's coming close to the end of the show. I actually added some more time onto the show, so I'd like to leave you with the opportunity. Is there anything, first of all, Gorok, is there anything that you would like to add?
Well, we did this presentation at the Global Initiative for Peace for Women's Contemplative Alliance meeting, I actually read a poem of Rumi's, which Cam and Teresa have written a beautiful song to, which I think in many ways crystallizes what Light Circles is really wanting to do. And this is the poem. It's quite short. But today, like every other day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty you love be what you do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. And I really think that describes the dilemma of all of us, particularly young people. You wake up, you read the news, you're alone and frightened. Well, don't go into the study and try and escape by reading what other people say. T- take down a musical instrument, something that connects you to your soul, and then let the beauty you love be what you do. Find what you most love. Find what brings you most alive. That's your life purpose. And offer it, not just for your own satisfaction, but to really support the earth, to bring in a new world dream. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. So that poem seemed to really sum up sort of the vision, I think, that we're all creating together at Light Circles. And the song that Cam and Teresa sang is such a... See, the music is really the portal into the soul for these young people. And that song, I think, really is so inspiring because the main chorus is, let the beauty you love be what you do. It's such an invitation to find why you're here on the planet at this time and how you can offer that in celebration of the earth and to protect, you know, humankind and all species.
Beautiful. Is there anything that anyone else would like to add before we wrap up the show?
I just want to say we have plenty of room in our family for all of you that are listening out there, so please don't hesitate to find us on Facebook. We are Light-Circles, so come and join our family in Chicago, or your family in Chicago.
And you can be from anywhere in the world, correct?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Anyone else? No? Okay, well, I want to thank all of you. Sorry?
Oh, I said I think they said it all.
Well, I really have enjoyed this conversation so much. Thank you so much to all of you for being on the show this evening, and I look forward to hearing more about lightgroves.com. Is that the address of
That's
the new
right.
site?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes.
Wonderful. And perhaps sometime we'll have time to, in the future, talk about your soul art a little bit more and hear some more of your music.
That'd be wonderful. The songs are very special. And as I say, I think this is the way to communicate or to create actually a movement, a light circle movement. It's a new kind of music. That's the new world.
Mm.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Okay, well, thanks, Marie, very, very
thanks
much.
Thanks for having us
Thank
so
you.
Much.
Thanks for coming on. Have a great night.
Yeah.
You
Good night.
Too.
Marie.
Take care.
Namaste.
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 Bye-bye. So that was Borak Hayashi. He is a teacher at the Columbia College in Chicago. That's a liberal arts college focusing on arts and media studies. And that was also a group of his students. And so thank you so much for everyone for being on the show. And I look forward to speaking with them again in the future. If you would like to connect more, I'm going to put up that link on the show page to their Facebook group as well. But you can also find out more information about Namaste Publishing at namastepublishing.com. We have an interactive spiritual community where you can connect with other like-minded people. So thank you so much for being with us tonight. And next week we'll be talking about how you can experience and live the life that you have, being happy with what you have and making the most out of your current life. And that is, we'll be discussing the book Hand Wash Cold. So please join us again next week at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern Time here on Namaste Radio. Have a wonderful evening. Be well. Namaste.
Thank you for joining with us for this hour of Namaste Radio. For further spiritual insights and sharing, please join us in Namaste Global Community at namastepublishing.com. If you enjoyed the show, please add Namaste Radio as a friend, favorite the show, and tell someone about it. Sharing this show is a precious gift that's completely free. Thank you. May you enjoy each moment of your day. Namaste.